Welcome to Simple Life, and we're in studio today with Dr. Frank DeLuca from Carmel Valley. Hi, Frank.
Hello, Cynthia.
How are you?
Great.
Good.
I really am. It's great to just sit here already and find out what's going to happen.
I know. Just a curious thing, isn't it?
It is.
Well, as you know, Simple Life is a radio show dedicated to story and focuses on the unheard voices of the Central Coast. And I realized on the way over here today that although many people know your voice because you're a doctor, it's usually behind doors, isn't it?
It is. Although I have the classes I do too. But yes, a lot of my work as a therapist is behind closed doors, right?
And so your profession is in the field of psychology?
Mm-hmm. I'm a marriage and family therapist. And so my doctor title here is from a doctorate in East-West psychology.
East-West. So mm-hmm. You do some integration work.
I do. It's the basis of my work. Yeah.
What was your original motivation to go into this particular field?
I think it was the fact that I have always worked with people. I started in my 20s, you know, as a personal growth workshop facilitator. And after doing that and working in corporate trainings and things, I felt that I wanted a deeper connection with people, that perhaps being a therapist would help me get there.
Mm-hmm.
So I did do the training in Master's in Counseling Psychology, and I chose a school in San Francisco, the California Institute of Integral Studies, because it felt as though it was a closer fit for who I sensed I was, that psychology alone, while being useful, is not really complete if it's just kind of a medical model psychology.
I'm really glad to hear you say that. I really respect that perspective.
It's always made sense. I've just tried to do things that make sense to me and have to find my way towards situations, people, or opportunities that seem to fit that.
Sounds like you're drawing from your own life experience in hopes that it can be of value to others.
Very much.
Yeah. And do you find that your approach is one that is typically more empowering, or how do you like to work with people?
I think empowering would be a good word. I love philosophy and Eastern philosophies and theories of people and of life and all of that. But I have such a strong practical bent to me. It kind of drives me crazy at times. So that my quest has always been to take whatever might seem transcendent or from the other side, but bring it so that it really is the immediacy in people's lives and the issues they're dealing with, which are with their family and friends and life choices and making a living, and so real nitty-gritty stuff.
Mm-hmm. So they can take what they learn from you and then apply it and use it immediately.
Well, what they may learn from me, but mostly, especially in therapy, is really what they learn from themselves.
Is that why you I know you use the Enneagram as a model to learn and work with.
Yeah.
Is that one of the reasons why you choose that route?
It is. I just found that in working with certain clients, especially if someone is coming in and after 6 months or a year and a half, you realize that the story hasn't changed.
Mm.
That the, you know, particular situations may have changed a bit, a new job, a new relationship, but the complaint is the same.
Mm-hmm.
And that there's not a lot of learning. And I start to hear that what they're going through is actually a pattern. It's not a new thing each time. And the Enneagram is brilliant at describing these kind of deeply rooted mental, emotional patterns that we live in. So I found I just, almost for my own survival, wanted people to learn the Enneagram, because I knew if they could hear their story in the way I was hearing it, they would progress a lot more quickly. They would do their own work.
It gives them a sense of objectivity to work with.
Exactly. That's exactly it. They have more objectivity. They can see their own mind. They can see their own emotional patterns. So they're not quite as much a victim. And they also don't feel crazy or alone. Because,
well, that's important.
You know, I mean, truthfully, one of the questions that's always there, sometimes explicitly, if not implicitly, in sessions is, am I crazy? Or am I normal? Or are other people like this? And I can say yes, but they don't know that just talking to me. So in classes with other people, it's a wonderful normalizer, I could say. Or you might have a particular brand of your own neurotic ways, but so do other people. And so you just realize you take your place in the human race.
We're in studio today with Frank DeLuca, Dr. Frank DeLuca of Carmel Valley, if you're just joining us. And we're speaking about the use of Enneagram to understand self and others. And I just want to mention, Frank, so that our listeners will know, we do carry the basic Enneagram book, which has been... I love that book. It's so easy to use, and it's got the questions so you can find out what you are in the Enneagram. And I wonder what your greatest challenges have been in a field of therapy with, you know, the close connections you want with people. Has it brought challenges with it?
Yes. It's brought great joy and great challenge. Overall, I love it. What I love is being able to have real conversations with people, that when we sit down together, I'm going to have the opportunity to sit in the real concerns in someone's life.
Right.
So it cuts through superficiality immediately, or maybe not immediately, but through time.
You're building relationship with that
person.
Yes,
it's very much about relationship. You know, when I did workshops in my 20s and 30s, I had a chance to work with thousands of people and hear many, many stories. And then therapy, you know, many stories. And it, as you know, and you talk about here, it's the stories that we learn from. We learn from each other.
Right.
We learn about ourselves. And so I find that I get a chance to be a part of somebody's story for a while. And I take great interest in it. And I try to listen for, who is this person? And what are they struggling against? And how could I help them in that struggle to see that they have a resource maybe they didn't think they had? The challenges are at times when people are not able to self-reflect very much. And it means that they aren't able to see their patterns, not able to see what they're doing in their behavior, in their attitudes, could be harming themselves or other people. And it just takes a while for someone to come to that certain kind of relationship with themselves. And sometimes it doesn't come. And that's painful. I have to say, that's been a challenge, to learn to be with people at times when I know it may not get better for them.
Right.
And I have to deal with my own sense of helplessness or wanting to do more, and or wanting to just know I have to step back and be kind. And
that's patient.
And very patient.
Yeah.
I'd say patience is a big part of it. Because I tend to be in a hurry with myself.
No.
Let's get there. Let's fix it, you know. And
I don't know anything about that.
So patience is like, oh, no, please, anything, God, but no, don't ask me for patience.
But it's a different kind of intimacy, isn't it?
Oh, yeah.
Because you're really present with the vulnerability or the pain or the helplessness on their part.
Yeah.
It's very intimate.
It's a remarkable thing. I mean, I don't know how to describe, but it's such a window. It's a sacred place to be able to have that kind of trust with people, first of all. That's sacred, that people would be willing to walk through the door and tell me things that they perhaps have never told anyone else before.
That's very true.
And they have to know that I can hold that for them.
Right. You can stay present with them and continue to be interested.
Yes, yes.
Yeah.
What I've learned, I think, is that since I know, and the Enneagram has helped me to see this, that I'm incredibly judgmental and critical of myself first, you see, and then other people. Because I'm, by this time in my life, pretty aware of that inside, I wouldn't want someone else to have my criticism or judgment. I seem to be able to, I can't say I hold it back, but I just look at people and say, well, of course you're having a hard time, or of course you're feeling this way, or yes, and is there a problem here? And so a lot of times what people think is a problem, I don't see it as a problem. In fact, I've noticed that through the years when people know that I'm a therapist will say, well, how could you stand to do that? How could you stand to listen to people's problems day
All
after day?
Day
and people complain, you know?
Yeah.
And I think to myself, well, see, I don't think that that's what I do. I'm not aware of it. There are times when I do get tired. It's like, okay, shut up and grow up.
Yeah.
but most of the time, it really is just being there with whatever it is, and just having this conversation that takes us places that neither of us might know about.
So perhaps it's more of a sharing for you than a complaining.
I find it's a sharing. And I figure if someone has been willing to make an appointment with a therapist, is willing to show up for the appointment, is willing to pay money for it,
yeah,
and to come back again,
right,
that this is a special person.
Yeah.
That this is, they already are 90% there because they recognize that there's some need to be open to another human being.
Mm-hmm.
That to me is worth the that is the price of admission, basically.
Uh-huh. If you're just joining us, we're here in the studio with Dr. Frank DeLuca of Carmel Valley, a local friend and neighbor for a number of years for Paul and myself at Pilgrim's Way. So, Frank, I'm really curious about your connection with St. Francis of Assisi and whether or not that has some special meaning for you.
As you know, I ordered a candle from you, right? So, St. Francis. Well, yes. My name is Frank, which is from Francis.
Uh-huh.
I grew up in an Italian Catholic family, and so our patron saints were pretty important to us. For example, on All Saints Day, which I think is November 1st after Halloween, we would come dressed as our celebrity saint, you might say.
So Your favorite saint.
My favorite saint. I came as Francis. I went as Jesus the first year, but that didn't go
they
over
didn't
too
work.
Well, no. That was my mother's idea.
I see.
But I always had some connection there, partly because of the name, partly just because of the simplicity, I think.
Mm-hmm.
But Francis kind of made his presence known, I would say, more in my life over the last 4 or 5 years. And part of that came through relationship. I do work in San Francisco as well,
mm-hmm,
and have, you know, certain connections, different people. And someone introduced me to Angela Alioto, who some people know was a former city council member, in San Francisco.
Okay. I think she served on San Francisco's Board of Supervisors.
And has been very devoted to Francis since she was a teenager on her first trip to Assisi. And in conversations with her, and in being around her and her sense of complete dedication, I would say, or clarity that Francis is kind of guiding her in her life, mm-hmm, she does incredible work. She's an attorney, does discrimination suits and things like this, and is kind of like helping to set things right in the world. She also then, with her connection, wanted to have a chapel or a place to go in San Francisco, given this is St. Francis's city.
Yeah.
And she, through quite a remarkable progression of things, was able to recreate a replica of a sacred chapel in Assisi called La Pontucola, which was the little chapel that Francis first came to and his conversion experience. And that chapel still exists, and it's housed in a basilica.
Mm.
And through her relationship with her, I made a trip to Assisi 2 years ago. And that really shifted some things for me. I wasn't expecting it, but I found that when I was there, I felt very at peace. I would go to the crypt where his bones still remain, especially in the early morning. There's no one around. And I would just go into these deep, deep meditations without any effort, of complete peace. Many people experience that there, whether they're Catholic or not. Other people who have been there, other people who don't know anything about St. Francis, they have nothing about saints and all this, but there's something in the energy of the place
itself.
So since then, I've did a lot of reading about him, of course. I mean, when I was a kid as a Catholic, I really took part in the adoration of saints. But as I grew, that faded for me. I really didn't, I was going to say I didn't believe in saints, but that just wasn't a part of my life. I don't pray to him as much as just, it's like, it's a wonderful play, wonderful model for simplicity and humility. That is a constant reminder to me. And so going back to even in therapy, you know, I can sit with people, and if I just kind of recall what I pick up from that energy of Francis and this incredible humility and absolute love of the divine, that's kind of a base for me. Mm-hmm. I don't talk about Francis. I don't need to, but it's a certain energy.
Yeah.
And so that presence is there. And it feels like becoming more important in ways that I really didn't anticipate.
If you're just joining us, we're here in studio with Frank DeLuca of Carmel Valley, and this is Simple Life. You know, Frank, when I think of St. Francis and actually see the representation in statue form or whatever, there's a common correlation between him and nature, animals,
right.
You know,
yes.
The stories of birds coming, rabbits and whatnot. And it's always struck me as an example of someone who was, as you said, humble, but also someone who really recognized the sacredness in all life.
Exactly.
And has that actual neutrality, if you will, or total commitment to all life.
Mm-hmm.
And correct me if I'm wrong, because I know you know way more about this than I do, but in his time, were his contemporaries understanding? Was he common in his approach to life?
He was a freak. Could say Francis the freak.
Okay.
In that he grew up, you know, Assisi at the time with these other wonderful, they're still preserved, you know, medieval hilltop towns in Umbria. And there was a merchant class growing. His father was one of these people. He was a cloth merchant. And he traded in fabrics. And he would go to France and he had fabrics from the East. So this was like a nouveau riche community that he was born into. He was a part of that. He was a party boy. He went on crusades later, but he was a soldier, and he was just known for living a pretty wild life until he was in prison in Perugia for a year, which is a neighboring town. They were at war with each other, and he came away from that very different, in fact, radically different.
Radically.
This is where Francis and I kind of part ways. I like my comforts. He didn't. So, but Francis felt that the only way for him to really be true to himself was to totally reject the material world, his wealth, his inheritance, his possibility of being in his father's business, the whole culture and society that went along with that. He just astounded people because he went and lived outside in nature. He didn't even want to live inside the chapels that were in ruins down the way that he wanted to fix, but outside. He thought you shouldn't own clothing. You would take, he actually got remnants of pieces of beggars' clothes and sewed them together.
Oh my, that's recycled.
That's true recycling. And it was a, you know, radical departure. Even the people who began to follow him, his friars, some of them thought he was way over the edge themselves.
I guess he would be a hippie of those times.
He would be a nut job, I think. But when you read his work and when you hear it, it's like that's where this innocence, it's like this just pure devotion to his sense of the divine in nature, in everywhere, and this kindness. And he was one of the people to help try to remind people that the message of Christ was to take care of people. Because in this town of Assisi, the cardinal's archbishop lived in palaces. It was all a very elevated life.
Right.
And he said, I think we're missing the point. He wasn't angry about it. He didn't protest. He just said, I'm going to do this my own way.
Right. Well, we're going to take a short break. Please stay with us. More with Frank and Simple Life. We're back from break, and we were talking about the more contemporary aspect of St. Francis of Assisi. It sounds as though coming from maybe you would call it a more rich family and a more social life, as his father was a merchant, he was looking to find his own place and the things that he really could identify with as an individual. Mm-hmm. Would you agree with that? Or
very much so. He was a mystic, and so he derived his knowing from inside. He meditated and prayed deeply for extended periods in cold caves. I've been to those caves, you know, near Assisi. But he also felt that it was important to go out there and to preach and to pray, and he got permission from the Pope to do that. So he felt there was both the need to have this deep, introverted, introspective time of deep reflection and prayer and ministry to take care of people who really needed help.
So he was very compassionate, you might say, as an individual, instead of just trying to complete what was obligated of him.
Yeah, he wanted to be among the poorest of the poor. That was his delight.
Uh-huh.
And, I mean, like I said, radically so. If we were to diagnose him today, I don't know where we would put him, actually.
You mean which point in the Enneagram?
The Enneagram or DSM or whatever it is.
Right.
But sometimes saints and mystics are on the spectrum somewhere out there, and they're being so individually driven that they don't have a lot of social conformity.
Uh-huh.
And I think he was definitely one of those people.
Mm-hmm. Well, I can see how something as loving and compassionate as a connection with St. Francis would resonate for you, especially in your line of work. And so what goals do you have? What personal goals do you have going forward? I mean, it seems like you're teaching, you're doing great service in the community in terms of talk therapy and just community work. I wonder where you're going. What are you doing next?
It's a good question. I'm evolving, as I said. But, you know, it kind of connects in with Francis. For the last week, I've been packing up my home because I'm moving to Southern Oregon, Jacksonville. And it's given me an opportunity to go through boxes and boxes of classes I've written, things I've taught, handouts, my whole evolution of thought, you might say, since 1978. I have records going back. It's usually about the same stuff, I found. I'm not really very original or very creative. But as you know, when we connected back in 2004, I was offering a program called Living a Rich Life.
That was a great program, by the way.
Thank you. I love that program, and I still work with that material. My website is still called arichlife.com, which is being redone right now. But that really helped me, and that came out of my graduate work. And look, my topic, you see, for my dissertation was psychological profile of the integration of material and spiritual values.
Right.
So I had to look at Francis at that time because he was one who said, no, it's only spiritual values that matter and not material. And I said, well, that's true, but I'm living in a very materialistic time. He was too. But I just can't imagine that I could live in this world in that kind of radical way. So I'm in the world. I don't think the world is bad. Well, he didn't think it was bad either. But making money and being a merchant, you see. So this is where I began to develop this kind of thought pattern that's helped me guide me and help guide clients called Mystic Merchant. Meaning, is it possible to really take this middle path? Can I honor the part of me that seems like a mystic who is interested in anything transcendent and other and see behind the material, but recognize that I'd take delight in the material world and in making money and in being a merchant? It's a very honorable profession.
That's a powerful message also. I remember the first time you shared that, and it was empowering. I have a very spiritual background, and much like St. Francis, there was a lot of focus on denouncing wealth, denouncing power, and as a way to stay humble and connected to the divine. But in our world, I think, especially in our time, we really are best served by using all resources and finding the divinity in all of it.
Yeah. I'm more of that school.
Yeah.
I like my comforts. But it's not just that. I think it's true. We're living in a particular time when I don't know about past lives for sure, but I kind of sense I probably did several of them as a monk or an aesthetic, you know, kind of person. But I came in this lifetime not to do that one. It's still in me, so I have to fight against it. And I think I'm here to really be in the world and be successful in the world, but to hold on to whatever this is that seems so vitally important in my heart. It hasn't been an easy path. I still keep kind of changing and morphing into different things professionally. My sense of professional identity is all over the place. Even to call myself a therapist, I said, well, I'm not quite a therapist. Or that's where I've gotten into trouble with people at times that came to me thinking I was just a therapist, and I would have to find out, well, not quite. And if they really needed more specific kind of therapeutic work, I'd have to refer them, which was not so great.
We're in studio today with Frank DeLuca from Carmel Valley, and you're listening to Simple Life on KRXA. So your identity includes being a therapist, Frank?
It's a therapist. I also have been a consultant, and I still am. I do executive coaching. I've been an organizational consultant in companies. I teach the Enneagram. I'm using the Enneagram and teaching it right now in organizations, particularly right now in Northern California with a number of private schools, the heads of schools and administrators. There's always this in and out with certain corporate work. That's kind of challenging for me. Mostly, it's how do I continue to be who I am? I don't want to say I'm just me. I mean, I have to take on certain identities, you know. Okay, I am a therapist. I do have a license. I do have that training, and that should be safe for some people. But I have to operate inside of that somehow and keep finding a container that feels more appropriate as time goes on. In my 20s and 30s, I was this, you know, workshop personal growth facilitator, and that was a wonderful identity and role to have that really worked. At a certain point in my mid-30s, it felt too small. I couldn't express more things through that. So I left it. That's when I went into corporate work and started to do trainings in presentation skills and team building and things like this, building on skills I had and adding. That was hard, though, to be on my own and doing all the marketing to corporations. And that's when I went back to graduate school and figured, well, I'll try being a therapist. Through my therapy training, I thought, I know this is not enough either for me, and I went on to get my doctorate. So it's been constantly not knowing what to call myself, but finding a container that fits. Starting to teach the Enneagram was something that really worked for me.
So the common theme seems to be continue to build skills in relationship, community building.
Yes, it's always trying to find a better relationship. That sounds like a better mousetrap. You know? But what I mean is a relationship that's more authentic to who I feel I am now, and that changes.
So is that part of your motivation to relocate?
It is, although it didn't start by thinking I want to recreate myself. But I don't know how to describe, because I, you know, Ken and I have had a really comfortable, very nice life here in Carmel Valley and have a home that we love. It's just really
a beautiful
simple
place.
Cottage that just is a very enchanted place. And the cottage that I was renting in Carmel for my office, another very enchanted place. But we visited Jacksonville 3 years ago, having never heard of it. A friend moved up there. And after the second day, we both felt drawn to be there without really knowing why. So that started a process, and it's still going on. The latest part of that process is having purchased a home in the historic town, in historic property as well, that part of it was originally the Eagle Brewery Saloon from 1856.
Wow.
So I think I'm heading back there. You know, my father would be proud that I have a saloon, I think. It's not actually an operating saloon. All I can say is I feel as though there's another incarnation professionally again. I will continue to do my work. I do more of my work by Skype and FaceTime now with clients so I can be anywhere.
Right.
So that's all I know at this point. There's just potential.
And you've spent some time there, so you've gotten to know the community.
Very much. I spent over the last 3 years, we did go up and spend a month at a time in summer around Christmas. It's like Brigadoon to us. I don't know how to describe, but it's as though it doesn't exist or not. Many people who live there actually say that. They've had similar experiences. It feels as though it's a place where people are kind, and not that they aren't anywhere else, but there's something in the air, and many people so far I've met have come to recreate themselves. They've left corporate America. They've left businesses or things behind in major cities and started a small store or started to run the local newspaper or whatever it is. And I don't know what my shingle will be there. although a name came to me recently, which was, I thought, who would I be in a 19th century town, you see? And I thought, Doc DeLuca.
That sounds perfect.
So one day I thought, maybe I'll make this Doc DeLuca's Emporium of Higher Consciousness. And that's all I know right now. But I did have my first salon in the saloon.
Uh-huh.
And I did an evening.
A saloon salon. Yeah.
And the topic was The Secret of Nothing.
Oh, boy.
And it cost $1.
Oh, now that's pretty simple.
Yeah.
We're in studio today with Dr. Frank DeLuca, Doc DeLuca from Carmel Valley, and having a conversation about simple life. Mm-hmm. I wonder, Frank, what you would describe as your ideal life.
Okay. I'm there in so many ways, it's amazing to me. And it's not a permanent state. It continues to unfold.
So part of the ideal is the evolution.
Yeah, there's a certain freedom I find. There's so much comfort and security and familiarity to my life here and good things. It's all very good. Trying to move when your life is really good, in some ways, it's probably more difficult than if you had to get out of town.
I agree, yeah.
So I'm not going from something bad to something better. I'm going from something good to something I don't know. That's all I know. And I do get a sense, though, that if I continue in my current incarnation, you could say, I will start to not grow as much.
Uh-huh.
I need a certain challenge. So that's what's ahead. My ideal, I think what I'm experiencing is, as you've brought up several times already, relationship.
Yeah.
I never would have thought of myself earlier in life as being someone who was so fascinated by or interested in quality relationships. I think for a lot of us, through time, that becomes more of the currency that we're looking for. I have that here. Jacksonville has presented even another level of that, a friendliness, a way of getting to know people. Also, because it's a small town and you walk everywhere.
I was just thinking that.
You're constantly interacting with people. You have to plan 15 minutes to a half hour extra to go from your house to the grocery store. It feels so rich. To me, this is the closer thing to living a rich life.
Uh-huh.
Because as you know, when I talked about a rich life earlier, it was about this integrating our personal abundance and our sense of a good business life, you might say.
But well-rounded.
But well-rounded.
And I mean, I remember it includes health.
Yes, it included health, yeah. And it included relationships. It included everything.
Yeah.
It wasn't just about having money. That was like one aspect, but it doesn't even have to be that. It's where you are with feeling content,
yes,
with that part of life. So this provides more of a holistic laboratory, you could say.
For now.
For now. And it could be for the rest of my life. It could be an experiment for now. I just know I'm meant to go there. I'll tell you, I'll put it very simply. One of my sisters came up to visit last summer, Tina, who is a Unitarian minister and a chaplain in Santa Barbara. Really wonderful. Has some wonderful sisters. And we put an afternoon tea of an inn that she was staying in that she had the whole place to herself and invited our neighbors, and people showed up. 25 people or so, and met her. And she was so taken, again, by the kindness of people. I sat with her after and talked to her, and she just cried. And she said, I talk about or am with people and trying to help them understand relationship and love. She goes, but that's what you're experiencing here and what I experience here. And she said, I really like who I am here.
Mm.
That was such a clear, wonderful statement. And I think that kind of sums up, I like who I am there.
Mm.
And the people I encounter, I think, could say the same. Does it happen here in other places? Of course it does. But there's something about that environment for right now that seems to activate or bring forward something in me that I feel it's time for.
We're in studio today with Dr. Frank DeLuca of Carmel Valley currently. We're going to take another short break, so please stay with us for more Simple Life. So, Frank, before the break, you were mentioning how in Jacksonville, you really like who you are there.
Mm-hmm.
And that it seems as though everyone else who lives there has that same quality of contentedness. And I'm wondering if maybe because it's a little bit out of the way and it's a small town, for lack of a better term, you have to want to be there.
Yes.
It's not a transient place.
No.
It's not, a stop on the way to somewhere else.
Mm-hmm.
So what advice would you offer our listeners, let's say, for having a more contented life?
Mm-hmm. Like I said, it can be anywhere. I've had it here, and partly is the sense of community and relationship. I mean, you know, it's been a delight for me to have my office around the corner from your store, and so I could just pop in, whether to buy something or not, or order something, or tell a joke, or just come in and laugh and go on. And to me, that is it. You know, it's my way of being with people where I feel like I'm part of their life in a shared independence.
Yes.
You and Paul have your life, you have your business, and hopefully in a moment in time kind of touch in on how you are in there with
it. Yeah.
And then go on. So I think what I have seen in working with people through the years too is this incredible hunger for good quality relationship and kind of intimacy that just means you feel seen by people. You feel like you're a part of something. And I've made an effort to make myself feel a part of things here, you know, put myself out to people. I be able to do public classes has been great. I just went through and cleaning my office, the class list that people came to your classes in 2004 that I was doing. And it's remarkable to see people who became friends or people I haven't seen since. Some people became clients. It's just people. And how many people I've been able to connect with on this peninsula in the last 9 years. So I think that being able to do what you do, and no matter what it is, to recognize in some ways it's your ministry. In some ways you're offering something that should mean something to you, and your trade wouldn't matter. I also think it's important to not expect much from people. Meaning that, you know, if I see people move and they might say people aren't friendly here, or I don't like, the people aren't great here, or they're, well, I've never experienced that.
Mm.
I always find great people. I don't find that everyone is great in my eyes. I'm kind of judgmental. So there are certain people I do well with, other people I don't, but I just wish them well.
Yes.
You know, kind of like finding my own tribe. For me, the older I get, the closer I feel I can be to just who I am. And in that way, I find people more easily because either we respond to each other or we don't.
Well, yeah. I mean, you know, one analogy is an orchestra.
Yeah.
An orchestra is filled with different instruments, and it is the collaboration and the harmony between them.
Yes.
Actually, almost the opposition that creates the beautiful sound.
Yes.
You know, with silence as a backdrop in comparison.
Beautiful analogy, yeah.
Yeah, I would agree with you. And it strikes me as I'm listening to you how those same words of advice might come from St. Francis.
I guess we're coming back to relationship with all things. And it is people. It's land as well. I'm a Taurus. I don't know how much it has. I think a lot to do with it. But that's part of my difficulty in leaving. I am so connected to where I live and the valley and the open space around me. And I know those hills and the green that's there right now. And I watch the trees grow. And I know right now in our yard the wisteria is coming in, and I look forward to it. And there is such a sense of self for me in that particular geographic place. I'm related to that land. But I'm trying to learn in life, I know that detachment comes in, has to be there as well, that I get too wedded to some place, to something, to some identity, and then I'm not free anymore. And I'm having to sacrifice something right now. But I feel like it's liberating. But it's, again, relationship. And I hope to, there's a just different kind of relationship now in a different community and still have my relationship here in a different way.
Well, and your connection to the land and your sense of self while you are here, I think, will transform, but always be inside.
Definitely.
Yeah. Well, I have to ask you what, if you don't mind saying, what your favorite book is before I forget.
You know, I know you told me you might ask me that. I really have a hard time. It really depends on what I read at the time that speaks to me. Like for some reason, what came to mind is a book by Wally Lamb, I know this to be true. I know this much to be true. I can't remember the exact title. When I read that maybe 10, 15 years ago, I just was engrossed in it because I related so much to the story, not personally in a way, but some pieces of it. I love writers who are able to do their own memoirs, or it could be, you know, biographic, or it could be just a novel, but it describes an inner story that I respond to. Mm. And kind of their own journey. And if I could write, oh God, don't, Barbara, you hear this, I'm going to write. But to be able to describe kind of this inner story that I find is very familiar to us all. When we tell the truth about our stories, then we know that we really are connected.
Yeah, it's almost like a validation of our existence.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And what are you reading now, Frank?
Well, one book I'm reading is called Poetry, a Spiritual Practice by Robert McDowell. It's a book I picked up in a bookstore kind of like yours up in Ashland. And I was a literature major, and I had written sonnets when I was in college. It was kind of fascinating to me to look at this person's approach to poetry and as practice. I also just finished Pema Chodron's, I think it's Life Beautiful. So I'm terrible at titles. I could never work in your bookstore. But again,
is it her newest one?
It may be.
Okay.
And it's kind of the three Buddhist vows described really clearly. I really respond to so much of the Buddhist heart of seeing things. Mm-hmm. And she is a wonderful spokesperson and transmits, I think, beautifully the quality of that with the wisdom and compassion. And I have found through time in my own work, as I describe a rich life or even my definition of Enneagram that I use, why we do it, I say, is to really cultivate wisdom, compassion, and effectiveness. And that kind of goes through the theme of everything I try to do right now.
Well, I'm going to really miss you when you finally do relocate, because you have always been a gift when you come into the bookstore and visit with us and chit-chat for a few minutes. There's just a lightning that happens and a sharing that never happens without laughter.
No. That seems to go along with me, is the laughter. And I'm so grateful. I think for my family, my father's side and my mother's side have this wonderful sense of, not just sense of humor, but sense of delight in life as we laugh at the truth of things. And that stayed with me. It helps me in therapy because my clients usually know that they're doing well, and I do, by the quality of laughter in the room.
Mm.
And that tells me a lot, because we don't tell jokes, but the laughter comes out of hitting on the truth, and we see ourselves kind of naked and go, isn't that a riot? So I'm glad laughter, it's been with you too, with the two. I know, coming to see you and Paul,
yeah,
it's always just a delight.
Yeah. You know? Mm-hmm. Well, I'm so grateful that you're willing to come onto the show and share yourself with our audience at Simple Life.
It's a great opportunity. I really, really thank you for this.
All right. Okay. Well, be well.
Thank you.